Chapter 56. She passed with her candle into an inner room, where, among other utensils, were two large brown pans, containing together perhaps 100 weight of liquid honey, the produce of the bees during the foregoing summer. On a shelf over the pans, was a smooth and solid yellow mass of a hemispherical form, consisting of beeswax from the same take of honey. Susan took down the lump, and cutting off several thin slices, heaped them in an iron ladle, with which she returned to the living room, and placed the vessel in the hot ashes of the fireplace. As soon as the wax had softened to the plasticity of dough, she kneaded the pieces together. And now her face became more intent. She began molding the wax, and it was evident from her manner of manipulation that she was endeavoring to give it some preconceived form. The form was human. By warming and kneading, cutting and twisting, dismembering and rejoining the incipient images he had in about a quarter of an hour, produced a shape which tolerably well resembled a woman, and was about 6 inches high. She laid it on the table, to get cold and hard. Meanwhile she took the candle, and went upstairs to where the little boy was lying. Did you notice, my dear, what Mrs. Eustacia wore this afternoon besides the dark dress? A red ribbon round her neck. Anything else? No, except sandal shoes. A red ribbon and sandal shoes, she said to herself. Mrs. Nunsich went and searched till she found a fragment of the narrowest red ribbon, which she took downstairs, and tied round the neck of the image. Then fetching ink and a quilt from the rickety bureau by the window, she blackened the feet of the image to the extent presumably covered by shoes, and on the instep of each foot marked cross lines in the shape taken by the sandal strings of those days. Finally she tied a bit of black thread round the upper part of the head, in faint resemblance to a snood worn for confining the hair. Susan held the object at arm's length, and contemplated it with a satisfaction in which there was no smile. To anybody acquainted with the inhabitants of Egdon Heath, the image would have suggested Eustacia Eobright. From her workbasket in the window seat the woman took a paper of pins, of the old long and yellow sort, whose heads were disposed to come off at their first usage. These she began to thrust into the image in all directions, with apparently excruciating energy. Probably as many as 50 were thus inserted, some into the head of the wax model, some into the shoulders, some into the trunk, some upwards through the soles of the feet, till the figure was completely permeated with pins. She turned to the fire. It had been of turf, and though the high heap of ashes which turf fires produce was somewhat dark and dead on the outside, upon raking it abroad with the shovel the inside of the mass showed a glow of red heat. She took a few pieces of fresh turf from the chimney corner, and built them together over the glow, upon which the fire brightened. Seizing with the tongs the image that as he had made of Eustacia, she held it in the heat, and watched it as it began to waste slowly away. And while she stood thus engaged there came from between her lips a murmur of words. It was a strange jargon, the Lord's Prayer repeated backwards, the incantation usual in proceedings for obtaining unhallowed assistance against an enemy. Susan uttered the lugubrious discourse 3 times slowly, and when it was completed the image had considerably diminished. As the wax dropped into the fire a long flame arose from the spot, and curling its tongue round the figure ate still further into its substance. A pin occasionally dropped with the wax, and the embers heated it red as it lay. 8. Rain, darkness, and anxious wanderers, while the effigy of Eustacia was melting to nothing, and the fair woman herself was standing on Rainbarrow, her soul in an abyss of desolation seldom plumbed by one so young, Eobright sat lonely at Bloom's End. He had fulfilled his word to Thomason, by sending off Fairway with the letter to his wife, and now waited with increased impatience for some sound or signal of her return. Were Eustacia still at Miss Tover, the very least he expected was that she would send him back a reply tonight by the same hand, though, to leave all to her inclination, he had cautioned Fairway not to ask for an answer. If one were handed to him, he was to bring it immediately. If not, he was to go straight home without troubling, to come round to Bloom's End again that night, but secretly Clem had a more pleasing hope. Eustacia might possibly decline to use her pen. It was rather her way to work silently and surprise him by appearing at his door. How fully her mind was made up to do otherwise he did not know. To Clem's regret it began to rain and blow hard as the evening advanced. The wind rasped and scraped at the corners of the house, and filliped the eavesdroppings like peas against the panes. He walked restlessly about the untenanted rooms, stopping strange noises in windows and doors, by jamming splinters of wood into the casements and crevices, and pressing together the leadwork of the quarries, where it had become loosened from the glass. It was one of those nights, when cracks in the walls of old churches widen, when ancient stains on the ceilings of decayed manor houses are renewed, and enlarged from the size of a man's hand to an area of many feet. The little gate in the palings before his dwelling continually opened and clicked together again, but when he looked out eagerly nobody was there. It was as if invisible shapes of the dead were passing in on their way to visit him. Between 10 and 11 o'clock, finding that neither Fairway nor anybody else came to him, he retired to rest, and despite his anxiety soon fell asleep. His sleep, however, was not very sound, by reason of the expectancy he had given way to, and he was easily awakened by a knocking which began at the door about an hour after. Clem arose and looked out of the window. Rain was still falling heavily, the whole expanse of heath before him emitting a subdued hiss under the downpour. It was too dark to see anything at all. "Who's there?" he cried. Light footsteps shifted their position in the porch, and he could just distinguish in a plaintive female voice the words, "Oh, Clem, come down and let me in." He flushed hot with agitation. "Surely it is Eustacia," he murmured. If so, as he had indeed come to him unawares. He hastily got a light, dressed himself, and went down. On his flinging open the door, the rays of the candle fell upon a woman closely wrapped up, who at once came forward. "Thomason," he exclaimed in an indescribable tone of disappointment. "T is Thomason, and on such a night as this. Oh, where is Eustacia?" Thomason it was, wet, frightened, and panting. "Eustacia? I don't know, Clem, but I can think," she said with much perturbation. "Let me come in and rest. I will explain this. There is a great trouble brewing, my husband and Eustacia."
"What, what?"
"I think my husband is going to leave me, or do something dreadful. I don't know what. Clem, will you go and see? I have nobody to help me but you. Eustacia has not yet come home?"
"No."
She went on breathlessly, "Colin, then they are going to run off together. He came indoors tonight about 8 o'clock, and said in an offhand way, 'Tamsy, I have just found that I must go a journey.'" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, when?"
"Apostrophe," I said.
"Tonight," he said.
"Where?"
"Apostrophe, apostrophe," I asked him. "I cannot tell you at present, apostrophe," he said. "I shall be back again tomorrow."
Apostrophe, apostrophe, he then went and busied himself in looking up his things, and took no notice of me at all. I expected to see him start, but he did not, and then it came to be 10 o'clock, when he said, "You had better go to bed." Apostrophe, apostrophe, I didn't know what to do, and I went to bed. I believe he thought I fell asleep, for half an hour after that he came up and unlocked the oak chest we keep money in when we have much in the house, and took out a roll of something which I believe was banknotes, though I was not aware that he had them there. These he must have got from the bank when he went there the other day. What does he want banknotes for, if he is only going off for a day? When he had gone down, I thought of Eustacia, and how he had met her the night before. I know he did meet her, Clem, for I followed him part of the way, but I did not like to tell you when you called, and so make you think ill of him, as I did not think it was so serious. Then I could not stay in bed. I got up and dressed myself, and when I heard him out in the stable, I thought I would come and tell you. So I came downstairs without any noise and slipped out. Then he was not absolutely gone when you left?
No. Will you, dear cousin Klim, go and try to persuade him not to go?
He takes no notice of what I say, and puts me off with the story of his going on a journey, and will be home tomorrow, and all that. But I don't believe it.
I think you could influence him.
I'll go, said Klim. Come, Eustacia. Thomason carried in her arms a large bundle. And having by this time seated herself, she began to unroll it, when a baby appeared as the kernel to the husks, dry, warm, and unconscious of travel or rough weather. Thomason briefly kissed the baby, and then found time to begin crying as she said, I brought baby, for I was afraid what might happen to her. I suppose it will be her death, but I couldn't leave her with Rachel. Klim hastily put together the logs on the hearth, raked a broad the embers, which were scarcely yet extinct, and blew up a flame with the bellows. Dry yourself, he said. I'll go and get some more wood.
No, don't stay for that. I'll make up the fire.
Will you go at once, please, will you? Eobright ran upstairs to finish dressing himself. While he was gone, another rapping came to the door. This time there was no delusion that it might be Eustacia's. The footsteps just preceding it had been heavy and slow. Eobright, thinking it might possibly be Fairway with a note in answer, descended again and opened the door. Captain Vi? He said to a dripping figure. Is my granddaughter here? Said the captain.
No.
Then where is she, Dot? I don't know. But you ought to know, you are her husband.
Only in name, apparently, said Klim with rising excitement.
I believe she means to elope tonight with Wildov. I am just going to look to it.
Well, as he has left my house, she left about half an hour ago. Who's sitting there?
My cousin Thomason.
The captain bowed in a preoccupied way to her.
I only hope it is no worse than an elopement, he said.
Worse? What's worse than the worst a wife can do?
Well, I have been told a strange tale. Before starting in search of her, I called up Charlie, my stable lad. I missed my pistols the other day.
Pistols?
He said at the time that he took them down to clean. He has now owned that he took them because he saw Eustacia looking curiously at them, and she afterwards owned to him that she was thinking of taking her life, but bound him to secrecy, and promised never to think of such a thing again. I hardly suppose she will ever have bravado enough to use one of them, but it shows what has been lurking in her mind, and people who think of that sort of thing once think of it again.
Where are the pistols?
Safely locked up.
Oh no, she won't touch them again.
But there are more ways of letting out life than through a bullet hole. What did you quarrel about so bitterly with her to drive her to all this?
You must have treated her badly indeed.
Well, I was always against the marriage, and I was right. Are you going with me? Said Eobright, paying no attention to the captain's latter remark.
If so, I can tell you what we quarreled about as we walk along.
Where to?
To Wildov's. That was her destination, depend upon it.
Thomason here broke in, still weeping. He said he was only going on a sudden short journey, but if so, why did he want so much money?
Oh, Klim, what do you think will happen?
I am afraid that you, my poor baby, will soon have no father left to you.
I am off now, said Eobright, stepping into the porch.
I would fain go with thee, said the old man doubtfully.
Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.